I cannot tell you how excited I am to be here today. And when I got assigned this topic many months ago, when I saw the title, I knew exactly what I wanted to talk about. And I was all excited about it until I read their description. And I was like, no. But I want to do what they wanted me to do. So it's pretty compact what I should be talking about. And then I want to go on to what I really want to talk to you about. But I want to cover this well, this school, this records and passing on, you know, teaching, that kind of stuff to the following teacher. I want to cover that very well. So be thinking, and in about 5 minutes, I want to ask you for your thoughts on that subject. And if you have something you want to share about that, share it by all means, and let's get that very well covered, and then we'll move on to part two. Because that's one of the little secrets. If you're a teacher, there's many times the books that you're supposed to teach, and then the books that are the things that you really, really want to teach. So if you're a good teacher and you really want to and you try your very best, you can get through all the stuff you're supposed to teach, and there might be a little bit of time left to teach them what you really want to teach. Maybe it's a subject, maybe it's stars or fishing, or maybe not fishing, or something, you know, that's interesting to you, or it might be something for their souls. And keep that in mind. So, records. Passing on, let's say you've been a teacher for a while, you've had an effective classroom, you've had a good classroom, and you want to pass on to the following teacher. You want him to be a success, or her to be a success. She's a new teacher maybe, or an old, but in, maybe they don't have the experience. You want it to be successful for them. So how do we do that? In my mind, the most useful thing you can do for the following teacher as a teacher of the year is have your curriculum figured out. Have enough books there, have enough tests there, understand it. If at all possible, go over it with the following teacher, tell them maybe what's expected of them, and because a new teacher going into a brand new classroom with maybe new curriculum, it's really, really confusing. I didn't find my Bible answer key until the middle of the second year I taught the Bible. And if you're familiar with Sealy, they have one answer key that's made during the Spanish Inquisition with none of the questions and only answers, and you try to cross-reference, and if you're really good at, like, maybe calculus or something, it works well. But then they have another really good answer key that has the blanks and the answers, and it's really nice. But I didn't find it. And it was nobody's fault but my own. But those are the kind of records I think you should keep. Now, the really important thing I want to tell you on this subject this morning is at this school in particular, they have a teacher training program that I think is second to none. At least in my experience it is. It includes the teacher from the previous year going over the books with the new teacher and the teacher from the previous year teaching the first few days of class, maybe the first week of class, and the new teacher sitting in the back of the classroom beside another experienced teacher. This is takes some investment from the school board and et cetera, et cetera. But that's what I did. I sat in the back of that classroom with my mom, who they flew out from North Carolina because she is a very experienced teacher, and my cousin Sarah taught the class. And I watched her teach. And all the little procedural things, the little how to let go for recess, how to go to the class table, I taught fourth and fifth grade, and I didn't know that stuff, and it made a lot of sense. It gave me a jump start into my year that I can't even describe. And then we graduated in this little class until I was actually the teacher. And then the other teachers, my cousin and my mom, sat in the back of the room and wrote notes and whispered to try to help me deal with distractions, I think, maybe, and also to critique what I was doing. And then later on they said, you know, did you notice that maybe if you'd have done it this way it would have been better, or this thing that you did was really, really good? And after the two-week sort of introductory program back there, I was prepared to teach. And I had all the theories before, but I did not have the practical stuff. And I had the practical stuff at the end of those 2 weeks. And I think if you are going to be teaching in a new school and there's not a program like that set up, try to convince your school board to get something like that going. Or just beg, borrow, and steal an experienced teacher to come in there and teach for you a little bit. Watch a teacher teach. Or if maybe your school starts a little later, go to another classroom. Watch how they start up. Watch how they do the first day or day or two. This is really, really good advice. At least it was for me. Anyway, things you do not want to pass on to the next teacher. Don't tell them all about your problem students. And I'm not talking about dyslexia or learning disabilities. That's good stuff. Tell them about that. Say, you know, I found this very effective for this student in dealing with math. That's good stuff. Or reading, you know, sometimes he's pretty distracted. If he could sit toward the back, you know, that's a, you know, little tips like that. The new teacher will find them out soon enough. But it can be helpful to pass those on. But don't pass on the, this was a naughty student. That little boy is a bad one. Ooh, you're going to have your hands full with that boy. Because shockingly enough, often the behavioral issues in our classroom are actually a large part the teacher's fault. And maybe it's the way we dealt with that student that made him into the naughty student. I mean, we don't want to admit that, and none of us are like that. But there are sometimes teachers like that. I saw one when I looked in the mirror one time. And so don't pass that on. If you can, give that child a clean slate to go on to the next year. And if you do that and the new teacher expects him to be good, very likely he'll be good. And I want to thank this community so much here in this community for giving me that privilege when I came here. There were some bad boys, but I certainly didn't know that. And they came to my classroom, and they looked like good boys to me, and I expected them to be good. And for the most part, they were. You know, they did a few little bad things, but nothing like they were supposed to have done. You know. So give them a clean slate going on. Okay, now, do any of you have anything you want to contribute to what you've done or heard of doing or wished had been done to you or had been done to you that helped prepare you for, or how shall we help prepare the next teacher to teach that's following in our footsteps? Any thoughts?
Consider it dignified. I would jump up and down and whoop and holler and say amen to the 2-week apprenticing thing.
To the what?
The 2-week apprenticing.
Yes, yes. I tell you, I don't know. To me, that it's so simple, but it's just mind-blowingly effective because Now, I love our Anabaptist schools. I love the way we teach. There's a lot of good things, but there's some really weak things. And that's one of them. We take this raw rookie teacher with a heart of gold and every desire to do it right with Jesus in their heart. And maybe they go to teachers' meetings and they get a lot of the big things. But the little things they might not get. And that's pretty hard to tell at a teachers' meeting. And it's pretty easy to pick up watching another teacher teach. Go home and get your school boards to do that if you can. Any more thoughts and ideas? And
I got a question.
Yes.
I don't know if this relates to it, but curriculum. In your experience, who was in charge of getting the curriculum and stuff? That's something I'm still trying to figure out at our school. It's a little shady. Like, the teacher orders it the year before, but then you have new students and just making sure you got everything before the school year starts.
Absolutely. That is a very good question. Who is in charge of your curriculum and who makes sure that it gets done?
But it should be the principal.
I'm going to disagree with that.
My point of view, it should be the principal working together with the parents because actually the parents must decide for their children what they would choose. This is how we do. The ultimate authority is not the teacher.
No, that's true.
But the parents, especially for the high school students. So we as teachers, we don't make any decisions. We just consult the family and the children, of course. But the children, mainly, they work together with the family. And we make recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have...
But that's not necessarily the question. The question is, your school has a curriculum. We as teachers rarely decide that. The curriculum is in place. We're going to do CLE curriculum. But who's going to make sure that there's going to be 15 students? Who's going to make sure all the books are there? Who's going to make sure there's enough textbook? Who's going to make sure there's enough tests? You know what? The only person that's qualified to make those decisions is the teacher who taught the year before. Right? Because he knows what they need. He knows the tests they need. He knows the books they need. And he is qualified to get it together, and that's his job. Now, who decides what curriculum to use? You're absolutely right. That is the parents, the school board. You're right on that. That's a very good point. We can't choose that. We can tell them what we like. But your job is to be organized, to keep records. And at the end of the school year, you know without a shadow of a doubt that the next teacher that's coming is not going to be missing all the tests in his history. Or he's going to have every single book he needs, and that is your job. Any more thoughts on that question? It is your responsibility as the current teacher to prepare the next year's teacher for his job.
So there needs to be clearly defined role. The school board needs to know that the former teacher needs to know.
This is true. Very good. Very good. That's define your roles. Make sure somebody has a plan. Make sure somebody knows what's going to happen, because that is really frustrating. If you get there and maybe you don't have much experience and you want to teach, but you don't, like, you're missing things.
I do think that the school board needs to be involved too. Like in a perfect world, it would be a meeting of the school board and the teacher, and they would go over it on a specific date. Because if you just leave it up to the teacher and you expect the principal to help you because he has all the and you have like a principal that, say, maybe procrastinates a little bit, and then you end up, you don't live in that community, and you end up leaving before you can order the books, and then it's just this huge big muddle in the summer. I think there should be a specific date that the teachers and the school board come together, they order the books, because the school board often has like the...
Absolutely.
So if you allow me, I'll give you a short example. We switched from history from class because it was too anachronistic, right? We switched to threads of history. That was a decision that we made together as teachers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the one of us, precisely in principle, suggesting it,
mm-hmm.
proposing that, so we agreed on that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when you teach history, when you teach a backup, it's just things come out without, you know, even thinking of them, because next year, obviously, you'll order a backup,
mm-hmm.
you know? I think this is a secondary issue.
Mm-hmm.
The main issue is who decides what curriculum will be used.
That's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah, no,
as teachers, you're right, that is the main issue, but that's not the subject
so
we're talking about.
The simple things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very
good thought here, Anna. That's a good thought. But we're discussing logistically how to prepare the next teacher.
That's
we're not discussing... You're right.
This is stuff, you know, shipping is nothing.
Yeah, no, but shipping a month into the school year... It's a different story. Did you have something you want to say?
Is there detriments to having another teacher start the school year and then you take over for the rest?
Okay, that's a good question. What do y'all think of that? What do y'all think of that?
I would be terrified to let somebody else in the classroom.
Yeah.
For me, I came in the year, I knew I was teaching before the year ended. So I was able to come in several days and spend a couple days
watching
the previous teacher the year before. Now, not everybody has that
opportunity.
For me, that's what I would encourage if you know you're teaching soon enough.
Absolutely.
There's also that problem as well.
Very good point. If you can, see if you can get in the year before, then you can start your own classroom. Actually, I think I sort of cheated here in my class. Sarah said, you really need to teach the first day, so I didn't really teach. I think I taught them a lesson in math and told them stories all day. But I did get to start it, and then she went on to do the... And maybe you could do something like that, I don't know. Because I think there is something about that. You know, as a teacher, you should start your year.
So jumping back to the curriculum thing then,
mm-hmm.
Something my school did that I taught at, we have a form
exactly right
that has every single one of every single grade for each curriculum. And so all that has to happen is, well, as a principal, I would give the copy to the first and second grade teacher, to the third and fourth grade teacher, and they would look at next year's enrollment, and we would go, all right, so we need this many. And all they'd have to do is write numbers down for each copy. And we had it set up with dual classrooms to where, I mean, like grades together, like
mm-hmm.
history, seventh and eighth. So on odd years, it would be this paper. On even years, it would be this paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of that went to one of the school board's wives, and she did all of our ordering for us. But all we had to do was go along, mark it in, and then if the ordering was done, we had our part done,
yeah.
And the books showed up.
It's a very good point. And that's exactly what we did at this school, word for word. And that is effective. And that's what I was thinking of. I guess I That didn't come through very clearly. That is very good advice. There has to be somebody, there's a form that should come, because and then you finish your, this is what we need, and then it goes on to the orderer. And of course we can't control the busy orderers, but you know, we at least done our part.
And that's, I guess, especially the case for like a lot of our schools use kind of a smorgasbord of
curriculum.
So it's not as big a deal. All you have to do is take the CLE order sheet and mark it in.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're ordering like four different curriculums for one school, then you do end up having a problem if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. And then when you get your books, try to be there. Usually the books come like the night before class starts because of how late they got ordered. But not quite. But sometimes it sort of feels that way. But when they do come, try to organize them. Get your piles. However you do it as a school, get it organized so it's usable. Books and boxes never really helped anybody learn.
At our school, we tried to order in March.
Nice.
For the next year.
Nice.
And that way they kind of know a little bit anyway. And we have the form like Chad was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they come, teachers are responsible to get them all boxed in first and second grade and third and fourth and so on.
Absolutely.
So that when the new teachers come, they can walk in there, look at the boxes, and hopefully have some degree of order. One thing that really benefited me the first year that I taught, the previous teacher took a bit of time. I think he was planning on spending 2 days with me, but his grandpa died or something, so it was only 1 day. But we went through all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me loads of good ideas, and I knew where records were and all kinds of stuff that I had no clue about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he did somehow manage to know that I was going to teach. I'm not sure how, and got me to substitute for him one time.
That's really cool. Yeah. That's really cool.
I don't know why I even knew that I was going to teach when I substituted for him, but that was a good person.
That's really cool. Did you have something, Gina?
The first year I taught, I didn't know there was such a thing as permanent records. I was home and Mom said something about permanent records. Gina, you have to fill out this permanent records. So during the summer I went in and filled out permanent records in their file. Did you receive instruction on that? Do you?
You mean, like...
Do you have a file for each student?
Yes.
Year averages?
Yes. We did. We do that. I think, I don't remember how we did that here. Did we do it all ourselves? Do you do it all yourself, Charity? Yeah. I can't remember if I just gave all the information to Joel and he did it, but I think I did do it myself.
We usually do.
Yeah, we do. You're right. I did that. Absolutely. I remember doing that.
But it's just once a year, and so you don't.
Yeah. That's right.
A little something to add to the form thing. It's really good if you actually do count the books you have.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I came and I ended up with 60 books of light use. That really bothers me because I like to use things up. So if you actually have a form, take a little time, count what you have and what you need, so you don't end up
with
a huge amount of extra books.
Good point. Very good point.
We didn't remain at last year. We realized that it's good for the teacher each to have a separate pack of books for each grade.
That's
we
right.
Don't fill in with the books, but we follow. It's much easier than with the teacher's guide, you know, because the teacher's guide, you really need in the first years, right after that, you know, we just go through the whole subject. So what we do now, we have a desk, and then we have a locker in our room, and in that locker, teacher will keep a pack of books that will not be filling, but just to follow with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. That's good. No.
No, I don't mean myself. I didn't use too much study guides.
But just remember, a lot of schools actually have good resources, and sometimes they end up in boxes and libraries and things like that. If your students didn't read them, might as well not be there. So, or try to use the resources that you have. Did you have something you were...
With the permanent records thing, something that came in really handy for me is every year they do a double-sided copy of the report card and it goes into the student's files. So a student, like especially for a first year, you're like, why is the student struggling in history so much? And you can actually go back and look at the last
couple
years of their report card. not just averages of everything, but you can see quarters.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
An achievement test. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice.
With the March ordering that Lyndon mentioned, I don't know if all teachers are aware, but most publishing companies get discounts with early.
Yes, it's true.
It comes in really nice for your school.
15% looks pretty good. That's right. That's right. So what I'm hearing here in a nutshell is that as teachers, you know, there's different systems and there's better procedures than others. But as teachers, try your level best. We're all teaching here, or we're going to teach at some point. Even you guys, guarantee it, I hope. And but what we want to do is equip the next one. We want to set him up to succeed or her up. When they come take over our little children, we want them to succeed. And so do the homework it takes to make that happen. Any more thoughts?
I don't have. I didn't have any training, and I was very frustrated by it because it felt like I was as mean and unexperienced as I could be. I wanted so badly to be an excellent teacher from day one, but it just wasn't happening. And so this year I'm trying to figure out ways that I can get training,
We all are.
To visit, our school is starting late enough. I'm hoping to go visit the school for the first couple of days. Really key days that I've never seen done.
Yeah, fantastic idea.
So if you have a chance, I think I'm looking forward to it. I really hope it's going to be a positive experience. Another thing is I just heard that, many of you know Nolan Yoder, he's not teaching anymore down in Oklahoma, and I'm really hoping to get him to come critique the class for a couple days. Mm-hmm. Just to, I don't know, it just feels either that or teach it. I don't know how I'm going to do that. But
critiquing you is good.
Somehow get feedback.
That's right. Because we want to succeed. We're dealing with too important of a thing not to succeed. Very important.
I don't know how many school board members are in here, but I...
John, plug yours.
I've been a recipient of a very helpful school board.
Mm-hmm.
And they've even sent me to summer term, which is like a 5-week, very, very intense process.
Yeah, that's good. I've heard very good things about that.
They pay for everything.
Wow, that's really cool.
And it's extremely helpful.
Yep, listen up, school boards. John, spread the word, brother, spread the word. That's very good. That is people who are willing to invest in their schools. And in their teachers, so their teachers can succeed.
Just imagine the expenses that the school board had for me.
Yeah.
Now for more.
That's a wonderful thing.
That shows, desire to help.
That's right.
And
that's right.
We are really blessed as teachers.
That's good.
This kind of support.
That's good. That's really good. Okay, well, I don't want to cut anybody short, but I really do want to talk to you about something else today. I can't tell you how good this discussion is. If I'd have known y'all had this much information and thoughts, I might not have planned anything else. And I'm probably, but it's on my heart to the extent that I really, really want to talk to you about this. And so, if that's okay, we're going to move on to part two here. And I want to switch gears. This is something profound happened to me last year that I don't know if I've even recovered from yet. And it changed maybe the way I think about a lot of things. And I want to talk about that and how that affected, how it affects things. Okay. Let's pray before we start. Oh God, I just thank you so much that you're here among us. Thank you that you're surrounding us and that you're holding us in your arms of love. Thank you for your mercy where we failed. Thank you for everything that you do for us. Thank you that you want us to succeed. And dear God, I want you to show us and help us feel the value of our time and the value of your story. And help us to pass on to our students things that'll make a real difference in their life, their lives. Well, God, just be with us and give us your word. In Jesus' name, amen. And I debated a long time about sharing this, but I think I'm going to share it. When I was in Bangladesh last year, in about the middle of November, I got sick. And I had a fever. And it was, I have lots of fevers over there, and I didn't really think about it. But I had a fever, and it kept getting worse and worse. And one day I came home from class, and I just went up to my little room there, and I slept, which I never do during the day, because I feel like if you're there, you should be working and teaching and being with people. So I went and I slept, and I had a pretty bad fever at that point. And as I was sleeping, I dreamed a dream. And it was a really unusual sort of dream for me. I dream a lot of really weird dreams about programs, and we were talking about that. But this dream was a little different. And it shook me like I've never been shaken before. And this was a dream. I dreamed that I was sick in Bangladesh, which I might as well have been awake. But I dreamed that I was sick in Bangladesh. And then I kept getting sicker and sicker until I couldn't go to class anymore. And I kept getting sicker and sicker until finally they admitted me to the hospital there, the Square Hospital. And I was lying in the hospital bed days into the sickness. And all of my friends from the bazaar there came up. There was the room in my dream got very, very large. And there was maybe even hundreds of people in the room. In my dream, it was just faces going on and on. And they were all in there to visit me and to wish me well and to pray to Allah that I would become well. And all of a sudden realized as I lay there in my hospital bed that I was going to die. And I thought, well, if I'm going to die, I have a lot more to say to these people than I've told them. So in my dream, I tried to sit up and talk to them. Well, I couldn't move like you often can't in dreams. And then I said, well, just lay it and talk to them. And so I tried, and I couldn't say a word. And in my dream, I got weaker and weaker, and they were all surrounding me. I got weaker and weaker until I died in my dream. And I hadn't told them what I wanted to tell them. And then I woke up, and I was filled with such an overwhelming panic. I've never felt that way before. It was just because I knew in my heart 100% that I was going to die, that this dream was prophetic, and that I was going to die. And I hadn't told the people in the bazaar what I wanted to tell them. So I went right down the stairs, and I went to all of them, and I told them, I said, listen, I said, I just dreamed, and it's from God. And they're Muslims, and they believe that's a very powerful thing. God sends dreams. And he said, he sent me this dream, and this is my dream, and I have something to tell you. Please come to my house tonight, because if you don't, I'm going to die, and I'm not going to have told you. And scared them, too. And they came, you know, and we talked and we prayed and I told them, and it morphed into a series of Bible studies and showed them Jesus, and God is doing something amazing there now with that work. I feel like he's not done there. But anyway, I got sicker and sicker, and I ended up being, I had 26 days of fever that was 105, and I could break it with a lot of Tylenol or whatever, but not for very long. And I ended up being admitted to the Square Hospital and lying there sick for very many days, but I didn't die. And I'm still not quite sure why. Seems like such a letdown after getting all primed up for it.
You didn't die because you called him before to tell
him. I think that's what it is. But I want to ask you a question. If you knew that in 9 months from now, you would die, and this is the very last class you'd ever have, and you wouldn't get another, how would that affect you? How would that affect the way you taught your lessons, the way you related to your students, the way you taught your students, and your relationships with maybe your family and the board and the parents and all that? We get so focused sometimes on our plans and our life and our goals, sometimes we forget to pass on the things that really matter. I taught those Bangladeshis English, and I taught them well. They don't all know English, but at least I taught it to them. It's hard to learn English in another country where they don't speak it. But I hadn't told them what really mattered. And praise the Lord, now I did, at least to some of them. But are you passing on to your students what really matters? it's not going to help them. Calculus is not going to help them on the day of judgment. Pass on something that they can live for. There's a beautiful story, and you've probably heard this. This is one of the favorite stories that I tell and that I like. It's a story about a king, a great and mighty king, and he lived in his kingdom, and he had a long gray beard and drank a lot of tea and was a very, very good king. And he was getting old, and like all wise kings, he realized that he wasn't doing that great of a job ruling anymore when he got old and sort of senile, and tea was sort of more important than many other things. So he called his daughters. He didn't have any sons. He called his three daughters to him and said, "Well, I'm getting old, and I've never really had much of a vacation, and I would really like to go take a few year sabbatical with my donkey and my tea and my honey. And I really want you guys to stay here and rule the kingdom. And when I come back, I want to choose one of you to be the future queen. And to prepare you for this choice, I want to give you a test." So he reached into his long, beautiful kingly pocket, and he pulled out three grains of rice and gave one grain to each one of his daughters. And they were just like, "This is sort of awkward, you know, dad's leaving and rice, and, you know, what do we do?" And, you know, they were sort of expecting textbooks and hard questions, but that's not what they got. And the king got on his mule and rode off into the mountains. Had a wonderful time, I'm sure. And when he left, the daughters stood there in the courtyard, and they looked at their rice, and they smelled it, and it was just plain old normal rice. Nothing special. Not even any gold involved. And they thought, you know, it's a gift of a kingdom. It must be something important. And so they thought, and they thought, and the first daughter thought, you know, well, if it's the gift of a king and it's this important, I should treasure it, and I should take care of it. So she got her goldsmiths and the crystal setters and the jewelers to build her a box that was so beautiful and so powerful that nothing could break into it, and coated the middle with silks and felts, and in the center of it, she put the grain of rice. And she locked it with a golden padlock and put it in the vault, where no one could steal this beautiful gift. And the second daughter thought, you know, this is rice. It's plain old rice. I mean, literally only rice. And so she thought, well, there's more rice in the kitchen. So she just threw it over her shoulder and went on her merry way. If she ever thought of something to do, she could just go get more out of the kitchen and do whatever she needed to do with the rice. And the third daughter thought for a long time, and she thought, you know, my father must have had a reason for giving me this rice. It's not just what does he want me to do with it? And she thought, and she thought, and she thought for 3 days. And finally, a thought hit her. What are you supposed to do with a seed? You're supposed to plant a seed. So she went out behind the castle, and she dug a little hole, and she planted it, and she watered it, and time went on, and rains fell, and the sun shone, and the rice stalk grew. And after a while, it had a whole bunch of little grains of rice, beautifully hanging from the rice stalk. And so she picked them. That's what you do. And there was not a whole lot to do other than replant them. So she replanted, and when they grew, she harvested, and replanted. When they grew, she harvested, and it wasn't but a few years until she had planted the whole castle courtyard and all the fields surrounding in rice. And then there was too much to replant, so she threshed it all out and loaded it on mules, and she sent it all over the kingdom to the areas that were hungry and that were starving. And she worked hard. She sweated, and she dug, and she planted, and she organized, and she fertilized, and she watered. And she kept on doing that year after year, growing rice and selling and saving the seed and growing rice, until her dad came home. And they were all sitting on the front porch sipping their sweet tea and eating cookies and talking about all the things that girls talk about while sitting on the front porch and sipping tea and eating cookies. Anyway, really good stuff, I'm pretty sure. And all of a sudden they saw some dust in the road in the distance coming toward them. And they realized it was their dad, and he was coming home, and he was riding on the same old mule, and he was just a wee bit fatter than he was when he left, but he looked really, really happy. His beard was longer and grayer, And his eyebrows were even long and bushy because they hadn't been telling him how to trim and things like that. And he came back to the castle, and the three daughters rushed out to meet him and gave him big hugs, even though I don't think he'd bathed very often during his enjoyment of the forest. So it wasn't very long hugs. And then but the first thing he said to them, he asked them, "Where is the rice that I gave you?" And the oldest daughter said, "Ha ha, I have it. Wait right here." And she ran to the vault. She opened the vault. She went inside. She got her box of gold. She brought it out. She opened it with the golden key and she showed it to her father. She said, "This is how I value your gift. I've kept it safe. Here it is, your grain of rice." And he looked at it and couldn't really tell what he was thinking because he could barely see his eyes underneath all his eyebrows. But he didn't really say a whole lot. And he asked the second daughter, "Where's your rice?" She said, "Well, hold on a minute." And she rushed into the kitchen. She just got a regular old piece of rice and came rushing back out and said, here's a rice." Kind of quickly, hoping that he didn't really notice. So he looked at that and nodded his head. And then he asked the other daughter, "Where's your rice?" The youngest daughter. And she said, "Well, Dad, I don't have it anymore. Not that grain of rice." And the dad said, "Well, where is it?" And the other sisters were like, "How could you throw away the gift of a king? How come you don't have your rice anymore?" And the littlest daughter said, "Well, it's not quite like that. Look around you and look behind you. Look at all the fields of rice. That's my rice. That's the rice that you gave me. And a whole lot more of it has gone all over the kingdom to feed the poor and to feed the hungry." And the king said, "You will be the future queen." And we as teachers have been given those gifts by God. We have His mercy. We have His forgiveness. We have His salvation. And we're planters. By the definition of teacher is gardener. You are a planter. That's your job. But I want to ask you today, are you planting what really matters? Are you making sure that along with everything else, the science and the history, are you making sure that you're planting what really, really matters? Do we value these gifts enough to pass it on? It's hard work to pass it on. It's much easier to just keep it in our hearts and save it like that first teacher. It's much easier to throw it away. It's hard work to plant it. But it's the only way to pass it on. If we choose to pass on the gifts, it will mean a lot of hard work, sweat, and tears. You will face failure and heartbreak. You can be the sort of teacher that just teaches without investing his heart into his students. And it's not going to break your heart when they choose not to follow God. But if you invest your heart into them, there's going to be some of them who do choose not to follow God. Even Jesus lost one. And if you teach for any length of time, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's very, very painful. But you have to still keep planting. And you have to still keep trying. Now, there's so many things I want to tell you, things that really matter that I want you to pass on. But we sort of know what they are. But I wrote down five here. Very, very simple things that I feel like are missing in our world and maybe in our churches and just in this broken world we live in, they're sort of missing. Teach your students to be kind. Not to be polite, well, but to be polite and all those things, but teach them to be kind. Teach them to be kind to older people, to younger people. Teach them to be kind to each other. Teach them kindness. We forget about being kind to each other and giving encouragement. Teach them to be trustworthy. You know, in this world of false fronts and pseudo lives, teach them to be trustworthy. Teach them that by your own example, that when the lights are off and nobody's around, you're still the same person you were when the lights were on. Be trustworthy. Show them how to be trustworthy. Show them how to love God. We sometimes know a lot about God, but we show them how to love God. how to want to be with God and talk to God. Show them how to love God. Teach them the value of time. We forget about how short our time is. We forget that we're going to die. We forget that we're not promised tomorrow. Teach them that every second is precious. And that if we don't value this time, it'll all slip through our fingers and disappear. And teach them to love learning. To love learning about God, about history, about science, about language, about people, about math, about English. Teach them to love learning these things and love learning yourself so that they'll feel that fire from you and love learning themselves. I would like to talk to you more about the how to teach these kind of things. But I think you know. And if you want to teach them, the Lord will lead you. The Lord will give you the moments to teach the how to teach them. But just think in your mind, what am I teaching? Because we want to teach them the things that really matter. As teachers, you are very much like a tree. Your roots go deep down into something. And effective teachers have their roots in God. Deep maybe in their communities, their families, but most of all in God. They're rooted in God. And in Him we get our sustenance. And then we read books, we read classics, we read, and those roots go deep. They draw wisdom and thoughts, and then the fruit comes out. Trees bear fruit. And interestingly enough with trees is they can't choose what kind of fruit they bear. An apple tree can't choose to bear bananas. Doesn't work that way. An apple tree bears apples. And what you are on the inside, what a tree is on the inside, an apple tree will bear apples. What you are on the inside is what you're going to bear. You can't be full of bananas or an apple tree or banana trees and choose to bear apples. Whatever's inside of you, that's the fruit that's going to come out. It's not what you wish you were. You might wish you were an apple. People might think you're an apple tree, but you're deep down inside, you know you're a banana. If you are a banana tree, bananas are actually sort of good at it, if you believe it or not. If you are a banana tree on the inside, talk to God. He's the only one that can change you from a banana to an apple. And He can, and He loves doing those kind of things. And you can't afford as a teacher to get the inside of this wrong. Now my brother told me this. This my brother Willie here, he has a lot of really, really deep thoughts, just saying. Really good thoughts. And he shared a thought not very long ago with me that really shook me to the core. And there's a beautiful story in the Bible about a crowd of people who were hungry, who were terribly hungry, and they didn't have enough food. They didn't have any food, and they didn't have any way to get it. And they were hungry for words, and they were hungry for food, and that's why they followed Jesus, because He was feeding them with words. And one day they couldn't feed themselves with food, and Jesus took 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes, and He fed them. And He took that bread, and He blessed it, and He started to break it. And He broke it again and again and again. He gave it to His disciples, and they broke that bread, and they broke that bread, and they broke that bread, until all those people got fed. All of them. And I want you to imagine with me how many times that bread got broken. How many million times that bread was broken until every person was fed. And as a teacher, you've been broken and you've felt that breaking. Sometimes we pray and we say, God, I can't be broken anymore. I'm not strong enough. Only as you're broken will you feed the hungry. Only as you're broken will this world be healed. And Jesus won't break you more often than you can be broken. He'll stop before you're completely... But let Him break you. We're not like bread in one way, in the fact that we can choose not to be broken. We can say, no, God, not going to do that. Not going to forgive. Not going to let that go. But when we do that, the hungry are going to go hungry. Interestingly enough, only when we are broken can we be whole. And I'm not sure how God does that, but only as you're broken can you be whole? And so I challenge you, when you feel that breaking, praise God, because He's feeding the hungry, whether you realize it or not. Now there's a story that I want to tell you. It's a beautiful, beautiful story about a shoemaker. And I'm sure you've all have read this story. But it's a story that I read and I reread and I reread because it's powerful. There's a shoemaker, is written originally by Leo Tolstoy. He's a shoemaker and he's lost his family. He's lost his hope in God. He's lost everything that he valued. Until he finds God again, and he finds the Word, and he reads the Word, and he loves the Word. And one night he's reading the Word in his little shop, and he's being fed. He's being fed by God, and he read the parable about Jesus visiting the Pharisee. And he went into the Pharisee's house, and the Pharisee was feeding him a meal. I don't know what all was happening. And then this lady came in, and she was a broken lady, and she loved Jesus, because he healed her from her brokenness. And so she washed his feet with her tears. She dried him with his hair. She anointed his feet with ointment. And everybody around there said, this is really awkward. This is wasteful. This is even sort of gross. And Jesus said to the Pharisee in charge of the house, he said, I came to your house. You didn't wash my feet. You didn't anoint my head, but this lady did. And so the shoemaker thought to himself, he thought, if Jesus would come to my house, would I wash his feet? Would I anoint his head? Would I even know? Would I give Jesus the welcome that he deserves? And so as he sat there and he meditated on this, he prayed. And in his prayer, he sort of fell into that half sleeping, half... And he heard a voice that said, Martin, I'm going to visit you tomorrow. And he knew that it was the voice of God. It was the voice of Jesus. And he woke up and his excitement and his thrill, he got his house ready the night before and he went to bed and he slept and he got up very early and washed and dusted and cleaned and put on borscht on the stove and cooked tea in the samovar and was ready and he looked out the window even before it was light because he knew that Jesus was coming. And he waited and he waited and the morning was going by and he was doing his shoes and then he saw the old soldier out there on the street corner shoveling snow in the cold. And he said, well, until Jesus comes, he reckons at least this old guy can come in and have a little break. And so he invited the soldier in and fed him tea and some food. And they had a wonderful time and they talked and they reminisced. And finally the soldier left and kept shoveling snow and beautiful. And a little while later, as he kept looking for Jesus outside, he saw a lady with a little baby in the cold, and they didn't have enough clothes, enough coats, and they looked very poor, and they looked like they didn't know where to go. And so he walked out, and he invited them into his little shop, and he gave them food, and he gave them money, and he gave them encouragement, he showed them love. And eventually, they went on their way, too, and with what they needed to live. And a little while later, while he was looking up and down the road for Jesus, he saw a lady with a basket of apples. And creeping up behind the lady in the basket of apples was a little boy. And he swiped an apple from the basket. And the lady caught him at it and grabbed him by the ear and started hollering for the police and beating on the little boy. And so how does this happen? This is retarded. Anyway, and so he went... And so he went out and he talked to them and he told the lady, he said, if this little boy is supposed to be whipped for stealing, how much more do we deserve a whipping for the things that we've done in our lives? And then he told the lady about the parable of the debtor and how much he was forgiven and how he refused to forgive his brother for about the price of an apple. And the lady said, you're right. You're absolutely right. And she told the boy that it's okay and she's sorry and she hoisted up a box of apples to go on. And the little boy said, no, please, Auntie, let me carry the apples for you. And so he carried the apples for the lady and it was healed and peace was restored. Well, time went on and the day was done. And he went into his house and it was dark and the village went quiet and he lit his fire and he And he thought to himself, this is not, I heard that voice. Jesus said, I'm going to come. And he never came. And as he bowed his head in thought, he heard a voice in his ear that said, Martin, did you not recognize me? It is I. And the soldier in his mind walked across the room. And then the mother and the baby. And then the old lady selling her apples and the little boy. And his Bible was open, and he read where it said, I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. And inasmuch as you have done unto the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. Look for these people. Look for these people around you, wherever you're at, wherever your school is, whoever you're dealing with. There is so much pain around you in this world. There's so much unforgiveness and fear. Look beyond their exteriors and their hardness. Ask the one who sees everything to give you his eyes so you can see these people as he sees them. Show compassion. Even when the crowd was screaming for his blood, he saw beyond the noise to their broken hearts, and he loved them and forgave them. Learn to know these people. Invite them into your life and serve them. Fill yourself with so much God that he is all they can see when they look at you. And in this way, you can pass on what really matters to your students. You're dismissed.